What's going on, guys? Welcome to episode 10 of Property is a Game of Finance. This is the second part of a three-part series with Steve Polisi. If you haven't watched the first episode, get back there and watch that one. Today, we're going to do a little bit of a comparison between residential property and commercial property and then dive a little bit deeper into commercial. So first topic we have today, I guess let's just go through the main differences between residential and commercial.
Yeah. All right. So commercial is a very big kind of plethora of options that you kind of have, whereas everyone knows residential. So types of residential, like standard houses, duplexes, townhouses, apartments, and that's pretty much it. Commercial, you've got a lot more other options. So you've got like industrial property, retail, office space. Then you've got a lot of the special type ones. So like cinemas, car parks, theme parks, petrol stations and things like that. So there's a few
Well, every different type of business is essentially a different type of commercial property.
And then you can have crossover ones as well. So like sometimes a medical center will be in an office space. Other times it'll be in like a retail shop. So it just depends. And same thing with industrial. You have like retail showrooms on the front of a warehouse and then different types of prisons. So it's really varied with the differences. But main difference is obviously cash flow and the actual types of the builds.
Yeah. What about capital growth?
Capital growth, as we mentioned in the last episode, exactly the same. Like different types of commercials are going to grow at different rates, much like residential grow at different rates, but they always have to remain on par. People always make the argument that, resi will go up higher. It can't. There always has to be some level of comparison between rents with commercial and rents with residential. Otherwise, why would you buy one or the other?
So the capital growth, you can't just focus on just capital growth. Like when you couple the capital growth and the cash flow together, that's the performance of the asset that you're focusing on, right?
Yeah, it depends why you're buying. You can consciously make a decision and buy a cash flow commercial property that doesn't grow as much as a residential property if you're just chasing cash flow. But that's the same as residential. Like how many times have you heard the people say, buy cash is king, cash flow. And you can go buy in a regional town that might not have the same capital growth as a commercial, as a CBD type property. Yeah. But it depends why you're buying. Like if you look at ROI, that's where you should be focusing on. But it depends why you're buying. You might be buying because you're retiring, you're trying to build a passive income, or your partner's going to go on maternal leave and you want to have a bit of a kind of passive income there. Same thing with residential. You might not be able to afford a inner ring CBD one. So you go to a regional town and you buy a multi-tenancy type one and get that cash flow and sacrifice some of the capital growth. And this is the thing with property. It's so varied. There's no right or wrong answer. No buyer's agent has the secret sauce kind of thing. It's just there's a pro and a con to everything. You're just going to have to weigh up the data.
Yeah. What about the development potential between residential and commercial property?
So this is the thing. So everyone will talk about resi having more value add options because you can renovate the property, you can paint carpet, do kitchens, bathrooms, you can add on extra rooms, you can build a granny flat, you can knock down, subdivide, build townhouses, apartment blocks, all that type of stuff. So they'll say residential has more value add options than commercial. And it does in some of those aspects, but any of those that you can do in residential, you can do in commercial. Like it's just a different type of one. There's no one stopping you saying buying a big industrial lot and dividing it up into lots of smaller ones. Like you can buy a big one, you can put some firewalls between it and you can actually split it into multi-tenancy and things like that. If you're buying a retail shop, you can renovate that property. You can make the front look better. You can build a residential on top. I saw one in Sydney a year ago. It was a fish and chip shop in Mortdale and it had an ATM machine out the front. An apartment built on top and telecommunications tower on top. So they were getting four different incomes from the same property. You can't do that with residential. Mm. So it just depends kind of what you're going. Stuff like an office space. Yeah, there's no value add option there. Like it's just an office space. You might do a nice fit out inside and that's about it. But that's the same as buying like an off the plan apartment. You can do a slight renovation inside and that's kind of it. But retail and freestanding industrial, you've got some options there. Buying a body corporate warehouse, no, there's not much you can do. Maybe put in a mezzanine area. And we can have a bit of a chat about that. That's one of the value adds with commercial is because they're valued off the lease and what rent you're getting, if you can increase the rent, you increase the capital growth of the property just from getting more rent. Whereas with residential, you can't actually do that. You make it a slightly bit nicer. Yep, cool, you'll get an extra 20, 30 bucks a week rent. It doesn't jump 20% in value unless it's a major, like a full big major renovation. Commercial, like, for example, like, let's use some examples. Say we buy a big warehouse and you get a 6% net yield out of it. Two smaller industrials will have a higher square meter rate than one larger one, just because it's a larger one's not going to pay a small square meter rate. So if you divide it into two tenants and you bump the rents up on each by 30%, you've effectively just fabricated 30% capital growth by putting a wall in a building. So it gives you those options. So for me, commercial has all these options, like I mentioned before, with ATM machines, splitting up tenancies, putting in better tenants, having more expensive fit outs. Changing the tenant can actually increase value. You have a retail shop and you turn it from a cafe into a medical center on a 10-year lease, that's much more lucrative and you'll get 30% more kind of profit from that. So it gives you all these options, but you just have to understand how to manipulate leases, the type of property, get the best kind of tenant and asset class that you're kind of working with. But yeah, it's much more creative.
Yeah, you're selling me as we're talking, mate. I believe you. But I couldn't help but think about the barrier to entry. I just kept going back to that point because these talking about big warehouses, you know, splitting into two, that would be a significant investment, right? You'd need a pretty big deposit. Like what price ranges are you talking about?
Again, it just depends where you're buying. So like you can quite easily buy a freestanding warehouse in Ipswich in Brisbane for $800K. So that's got some options there. If you keep going further out, Toowoomba, you get some options. But people say barrier to entry, and we mentioned this on the last podcast about leveraging as much as you can, but you can buy cheap commercials. Like I regularly buy like little warehouses in Brisbane, and you've seen some of them with our clients, little warehouses in Brisbane, Perth, areas like that for $300K. Like very hard to buy a quality growth property now in resi for $300K. You generally have to start spending $500+, otherwise you're going townhouses and things like that. So you can buy cheap ones. Like if you want to buy a regional warehouse, you can buy stuff for 150 grand if you want, but it's a balance between the vacancy rates and the capital growth and what rent you're getting. But yeah, there is a bigger deposit, and that is why everyone doesn't buy it. And the other reason is people just don't understand it.
Yeah. Or they don't know a good buyer's agent to help them through the process. Yeah. But 800K investment, that's not that much. Like really, I've seen people buying over $1 million properties that they want to live in. Difference is this property is going to return a pretty good rental income as well.
And that's the thing. Like I tell people, you can go buy $1 million residential property that costs you 10 grand a year, or you could go buy $1 million commercial property that gives you 30, 35 grand a year passive income. And you could use that to rent the rest of your life and you are debt free. You can travel the world. You can spend money. You start getting rental increases. Or here's the other big thing with commercial. A passive income on a 5-6% net yielding commercial will actually pay off the debt in 10 to 12 years. So if you get like a 6% yielding property in 10 to 12 years with small rental increases, you'll end up with like a 70, 75 grand passive income just from buying one $1 million commercial. So when someone says, oh, I don't want to buy a residential to retire, good luck. You need a huge kind of portfolio and it's a 20-year plan. Commercial, you can literally quit your job in 10 years' time by buying one.
Yeah. And is that based on a P&I loan, putting all the rent back into the loan?
That's right. So putting the cash flow back into it. If you want to put extra funds into it, speed it up and you think, but it's like trying to get even a 70 grand passive income from residential, you end up having to have like $4-5 million portfolios and you're requiring rents to double and you've got to pay it off over 20-30 years. But commercial, it's a game changer. Buying one and going in 10 years time, I can retire. That's bloody power. Oh,
fuck, sign me up.
You buy two of them, 150 grand passive income.
Where do I sign? Nah. Hey, good time to plug the book, eh? Yeah. Commercial property investing, eh? Look at this guy. I want to talk about purchasing costs. So valuation was a bit of a shock to me about how much that actually cost. The valuation was like, wow.
Yep. So you got the same purchasing costs. You still have conveyancing fees, building and pest inspectors, application fees. The main difference is the valuation fee. So that'll be anywhere from like $800 to $2,000. And the reason for that, it's not like resi where you can just quickly check like three bedroom houses and the banks do a quick desktop val, send someone over and they look at it and go, oh, yeah, it's okay in the condition, we'll give you $550K for it kind of thing. Commercial, they can vary so much because it's based on who the tenant is, what the lease terms are, who like what the fit out costs are, where it is, the size of it, what mezzanine areas it has, where it's based in terms of foot traffic, road traffic, types of tenancies, whether it's like a good blue chip tenant or medical center. They basically do quite a lot of due diligence on the property. So you have to pay for that. But as I tell clients, it's a small amount of money in the grand scheme of things. If if you're paying $1,000 to get a passive income, it's not a lot of money to kind of do business. But on the whole, conveyancing will be a little bit more as well, because they'll be doing things like lease review and contract reviews a bit more common. So you're kind of looking at $1,500 to $2,500 there. I am talking about simple commercials. You start looking You start looking at like multi-tenancies and stuff like that can kind of get up there, but that's no different to buying like an apartment block. But yeah, for valuation fee, that's the only real difference. It is a bit more headaches in terms of, and we'll have a chat on the next episode about this, different types of lending and things like that. But in this market, it's never smooth sailing. Finance is always a headache, which I'm sure you attest to.
Yeah.
but once you get it over the line, it's definitely worth it.
Yeah. Well, let's touch on leases, yields and outgoings, because we mentioned on the previous episode about, you know, the main thing that people like so much about commercial is the yields. And we use the term net yields and compared that to a residential net yield of 3%, where you can quite easily get a commercial at 6%. So let's go into that and tie it in with the lease agreements and everything, how the tenant covers the outgoings and stuff.
Yeah. So most people hear the word net yield and gross yield and they don't actually register. They think it's the same number. Mm. So when I say I'm getting a 6% net yield, people actually say, oh, I can get a 5% in residential. Why would I just buy that? That's 5% gross. So when you buy a residential property, you are paying all the outgoings, council rates, water rates, maintenance, insurance, everything. So generally a 5% gross yield ends up being 2.5 to 3.2% net. Whereas with commercial, the tenant pays all of that stuff. You don't have any bills. Literally the only bill you typically have is property management. And then even then 50% of the time the tenant pays it. They even pay your land tax bill, which is baffles people. So if you're getting a property and it's $1 million and they give you 60 grand income, 60 grand is what hits your bank at the end of the year. That's what you get, because they're covering all the outgoings and things like that. And that's just part of doing business. Like a retail one, they'll even do all the maintenance. And like I've got a cafe in Brisbane and the tenant called me up and he's just like, oh, look, I want to renovate the building. I want to make it look really nice for obviously like get more clients coming through and make it more presentable for the road. He's like, is it okay if I do that? So he's asking, is it okay to spend 20, 30 grand renovating my property for me? And I'm doing nothing. So he did it and I get the capital growth out of the property. I get an extra 50, 80K kind of worth of value.
So did he increase the, well, he probably just paid for it but didn't increase his lease or anything, right?
No, because I've got the lease with him. So I kept him on the same lease.
Yeah.
But the funny thing is, theoretically, I could actually up his rent because it's a nicer property. I wouldn't do that. So there is some form of gentleman's agreements and things like that. Sometimes you'll actually give him benefits. You'll say, okay, look, I'll give you 10% less rent for a year or things like that. But he did it, paid for it himself, and I get a more valued property. Like, good luck finding a tenant for a residential property that's going to renovate your property for free. So that's the main difference. So it's net yield. It's not gross yield, and that's what makes it more attractive. You're generally getting about 3 times more rent than you are for residential in terms of net return. So, but like you said, high cost entry, so more money to get in the game, but the rewards are there. One of the kind of things I sell clients to is that cash flow you get actually pays back that extra 10% within a couple of years anyway. Mm. So even though you go, oh, I got to spend an extra 10% because I need a 70% LVR instead of an 80% LVR. If you're at the end of your kind of borrowing capacity and that's all you're buying for a couple of years, you make that back in 2 years' time. So you're in the same net position, but then from then on, you've got another property where you can have passive income for the rest of your life. So so there is that value there. I kind of touched on the outgoings. Tenants pay all the outgoings there. There are a few more kind of confusing ones when you're buying kind of properties as well, especially if you're buying like body corporate ones, because they'll have common areas where the strata is looking after like garbage removal and things like that. But the good thing is because the tenant's looking after all that, you just need to oversee it. But that's part of the due diligence as well. You have to do lease reviews and look at who pays what and cross check it with like their rental ledgers versus what the outgoings actually are and things like that. But we'll do a bit of a deep dive on that later.
Yeah, sweet. Leases, you talk about 3x3, 4x4. I don't get it. I do and I don't. Yeah.
So everyone understands getting a 6 or 12 month lease with residential. Commercial's the same thing, but people are signing 3, 5, 10 years. Like I bought 15-year leases.
Yeah.
I've got a Bunnings on a 20-year lease for a client. So you get stuff like that. That is really attractive to a buyer because they're like, cool, I've got a tenant long-term for that whole period. Mm. that the advantage is actually for the tenant itself, because they don't want to get kicked out, because certain industries, they're where they are to certain locations is paramount. Like if you have a medical center, they want to stay in that location because they're servicing an area. They don't want to be kicked out.
Mm.
So they'll sign like say a 5x5x5. What that actually means is you've got them for the whole 5 years. At the end of the 5 years, they get basically first choice to renew for another 5 years. So as long as
you couldn't kick them out after that 5 years? You can't
kick them out. No. As long as they pay market rate. So you could try and you could up the rent and try to get them out that way, but then they could theoretically request a market review, saying, no, we won't. And then, so that's security for them.
Yeah,
so
it's I guess that's fair.
Yeah, it's fair. But that's for certain locations, that's what they want. The power's for them, but they just don't want to be kicked out. So, but it's a very good indication if they're on 3x5 year leases that they're planning to be there long term. And that's the security that you get with the commercial. So even though you have slightly higher vacancy periods, you're getting the tenant for much longer periods with rental and bank guarantees on it as well.
Yeah. So how often then after that, you know, they've got a 3x3x3 after that 9 years, what would, you know, if they've built up a business for 9 years, they're probably not going to leave even then, right? So when they sign up, is there some sort of market review done there so that they're paying market rent or?
Yep. So everything is negotiable with commercial.
Yeah.
And that's the difference with residential. You can put anything you want into a lease. You can put in who covers outgoings and who does what and who doesn't and rental incentives. You can literally, it's just a contract. You can write any contract you want. There are some rules with like the Retail Leasing Act in terms of what you can and can't charge them. But for like industrial and office, you can do whatever you want, which is, you see some really creative leases and things like that. But normally what happens, they'd get to the end of the 9 years. And if they want to stay on, you just have a open negotiation about it because there are variables. You can change rental increases. You've got things like ratchet clauses where the rent can't go backwards. Like even the rental increases, you'll have either to inflation or 3% or 5% fixed or a combination of both. So there's just a balance between kind of with the property, who they are, how long. But ideally, if you've got a good tenant, you want to get them as long a lease as possible because that's why you want them. You want it fully tenanted for as long as you can, and then you go from there. If they get to the end, sometimes getting out an underperforming tenant is actually a better option.
Mm.
Like if you've got like, I don't know, a big retail space and you're getting some interest from childcare centers or medical, you might decide to actually kick them out because you want that kind of blue chip tenant. So that gives you the option there. And like we spoke about before, increase the capital growth because you've literally got a better tenant and more secure, because that's what you're buying. You're buying the tenant and the strength of the tenant and the location combined together.
Yeah. So when you're looking at buying a property, how much time do you spend thinking about the potential of having to relet it one day?
Pretty much that's the first thing I consider.
Yeah.
So I'm always devil's advocate.
Yeah.
Even if I've got a 5 year lease or a 10 year lease, I go, what's going to happen at the end of the 10 years? Because if the vacancy period's 2 or 3 years. I would much rather a versatile property where vacancy periods are 1 to 3 months because your net results.
But how do you come to that figure, like 12 to 24 months or 1 to 3 months when it's a 10 year lease away? How do you know that?
So you look at it, what it's going to be now, and then you kind of have to forecast. And you do the same thing with the types of business that you're buying. Like I'm not buying petrol stations for clients because I have no idea where that industry is going to be in 5, 10, because like 2030, we're only building electric cars.
Yeah.
So I'm not buying that. Same as like, I'm not a fan of banks. Like you see so many big banks and there's no one in them. I've not walked into a bank for years, probably 5+ years. So I'm not buying. So that's an asset class where I'm like, that's not going to be around in 10 years time.
Mm.
But if I'm buying, say, an industrial property and it's surrounded by residential property and there's no room and they're not building any more industrial space and the population of that residential area is growing.
Yeah.
Why is, if I look at the vacancy rates now, and it's pretty easy, you look at some comparables on CoreLogic and you go, okay, this one's somewhat similar size and it went vacant 2 years ago and it was vacant for 2 months and you find 5 or 6 of those and cool, vacancy rates are 1 to 4 months, for instance.
Yeah.
If that population is growing, why is that industrial space going to be in less demand now? So if anything, vacancy rates are going to tighten, going to get better rental increases, better capital growth. Same fundamentals as residential. You buy to supply and demand. You look at, okay, is the population growing? What am I buying? What's the vacancy rates with thing? That is one of the things with commercial though. It's not as kind of clear cut with vacancy rates. Vacancy rates with residential, you can go on like websites like SQM, look at the postcode and a 3-bedroom house is going to be pretty similar and they're going to have hundreds of comparables. You buy like an industrial property, you might only have 4 or 5 kind of comparables because you might find one that's like 200 square meters, one that's 400, one's got a mezzanine, one's got a nice fit out. They're all sort of slightly different. If you start going into retail, it gets even tougher, because if you've got like a retail strip of say 10 properties and there has not been a vacancy there for 5 years because it's a really tightly held area, what's the vacancy period? I can go find one that went vacant 5 years ago and go, look, it was vacant for 12 months. Does that mean you're going to have 12 months vacancy? Is it going to be 24 months? You get something like a medical center, which is a converted residential property and it's on a street corner. Hand up, I've no idea what the vacancy period of that's going to be, because if the tenant's been there for 10, 15 years and they leave, what is it going to be? You can look at prospective tenants. You can go, oh, it might be a dentist, or it might be another medical center, or a dog groom, or this and that, but you don't actually know. And that's why I generally encourage people getting into commercial, do something with good comparables. So it's like an industrial property where you get like for like, you can look at square meter rates and similar vacancies and get a handful of kind of comparables. But if you go something like a freestanding creative space, it's a lot more difficult.
So what's the typical tenant then in those industrial workspaces then?
This is the awesome thing about industrial is it can Anyone. Be anything. Yeah. It's three concrete tilt-up panels and a roller door. And we had this chat before with the social media guys.
Yeah.
It's very simple, and they can come in. You can have anything,
like
car mechanic, fabricators, storage.
And they're not typical industries that you can work from home.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's another thing I wanted to touch on, retail spaces and office spaces. Like, how's that industry going to go in the next 10 years?
So this is what you funny mentioned, the industrial space. People will say, oh, yeah, commercial is going to go up and down and the economy, yada, yada, yada. Commercial, like industrial, doesn't disappear. You still need all of those services. Yeah. Even during the pandemic, vacancy rates on industrial actually tightened because of the e-commerce boom. Everyone was like needed storage and quick sales and things like that. Vacancy rates at the moment like 1.2 to 1.4%. So like that's just as tight as most residential areas.
Yeah.
Again, industrial, because you need space. Like people go, oh, but everyone needs a roof over their head. And then I'll always respond with, where do you think the roof came from? It came from an industrial property. Everything you touch in your life has been through 10 to 15 warehouses before it even got to you. Yeah. So warehouses are just as central to life as residential. Yeah. But to go on to your next question in terms of retail, I've never really liked like CBD retail. I thought it was overpriced and it was kind of too hard for most businesses to kind of make survive. COVID exacerbated that. Now that people aren't going to the city as much, the foot traffic's much lower. The suburban...
Online shopping,
but a lot of
times... But I still prefer to go into the shops.
So do I. I'm a weird, tall, lanky guy, so I can't even buy clothes without trying them on.
Yeah.
But when people say, oh, like shopping's down, like retail's down, they're talking the big data from like the Westfields and stuff like that. A medical center is not a Westfield. Same as if you buy like the little suburban strip shop that has the hairdresser, the barbershop, the physio, the dentist, stuff like that. They actually went up during COVID. So you still need those services. So I always focus on what I call like essential services, and that's stuff where you have to go face to face. You can't get a haircut online. Mm-hmm. So anything where there's people interface, they're the ones that I kind of focus on. Similar kind of concept to industrial. If you're buying in a little suburban strip shop and it's surrounded by big residential population and there's no big shopping centers getting built, that's always going to have some form of demand, especially if in the lifestyle areas. Like I buy a lot of like beachfront properties on the Sunshine Coast and things like that, because people are always going to want to be there and get coffee and haircuts and massages and things like that. So that's a lot harder space to understand though, because you need to analyze things like foot traffic, the time of the year, time of day that they get the foot traffic, what businesses thrive. So you're not just simply looking at the area. You're actually looking at types of businesses that survive, and you have to be a bit more of a business analyst. Office space, somewhat similar to CBD retail. It's not as in demand. Vacancy rates are really high at the moment. Similar to like off the plan apartments, that's how I treat office space. You're too much at the helm of like, say you buy a really good tightly held office space and then they buy, I don't know, 10 houses next to it and build a 20-story skyscraper next to you. You've just got a huge influx of oversupply. Also similar, I suppose, buying off the plan houses. If you go buy a greenfield estate and they've just built 200 of them, you've got an oversupply. So it's kind of too much risk for me. And like I said, I don't like paying for concrete in the sky. I want a land component with some value add.
Man, this was a really informative episode. Thank you very much. I'm dead set thinking about how the hell am I going to buy a freaking commercial now.
Well, get my book, free copy, organic.
Yeah. It's all here, mate. It's all here. Nah, all right. Sweet. Thanks. We got another episode in the series. So, yeah.
Awesome. Thanks, Jack.
Cheers.